chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. How are you doing this evening? Have you had a nice weekend? Certainly lovely weather, huh? And I hear a rumor that there might be rain coming up on Wednesday. Let's hope. You may have noticed, online, in print, there's a lot of talk about chicken, livestock, that sort of thing. And that's what we're going to explore tonight. And I just want to preface it before I introduce my guests, saying I was reading an article about Tyson chicken, which under no circumstances should you ever, ever buy Tyson chicken. For lots of reasons, they have a long history of not treating their employees well at all. They also have a long history, as most industrial meat companies do, of not treating their animals very well. The other thing is we live in such an amazing region when it comes to farming and ranching that we have choices that a lot of people in other parts of the country don't have. Here in Sonoma County, you can go to your farmer's market and you can get almost anything you need to get you have beautiful meals 3 times a day until your next farmer's market. And one of the things that never figures into the discussions in national news that I can see is that the sense of satisfaction that we get when we eat higher quality foods, I guess we'd say. I've long felt that one of the reasons we have such a problem with obesity in America is that we're eating a lot of foods that don't satisfy us. And satisfaction and the pleasure that we take in food is innate. We want that. We strive for it. And when we don't get it, we keep trying to get it. So when you're eating something like, oh, a sad chicken breast that has no flavor. It has almost no muscle tone because it hasn't been able to move. It's the same thing with, say, farm salmon. Farm salmon is a predator. And for most of its life, a salmon is swimming out in the ocean using that big, huge muscle. And then when it's coming back in to spawn and then die, which is part of its natural cycle, that's when we fish and we eat it. And there's a huge difference between that well-exercised muscle, and not just in taste, but also in nutritional value. So I feel strongly that cost, and that's the reason someone would buy Tyson, availability and cost. There's a lot of hidden costs when we eat inferior foods. And if you compare the price of, you know, I don't know what commodity chicken costs anymore because I haven't looked, but it's cheap. And you balance that against, you know, $5, $4, $5, $6, $7 a pound, and you're on a limited budget, you might think that that's, well, I can't afford that. But in fact, once you get over the learning curve of shopping differently, eating closer to home and eating better foods, you actually find that in a lot of ways it really evens out, in part because you're satisfied with less because it's so good and it's so nourishing. So on that note, tonight we're going to be exploring meat in Sonoma County, and there's a livestock event that's coming up, I believe, on November 7th. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so that's why Catherine Thone and Savannah Shell, I got that right. Savannah Shell, you're part of 4-H, right?
Yes.
Yes, and you're involved with animals that will be featured, or meat that will be featured at the livestock event?
Yeah, November 7th.
Okay, great. And then we also have with us, returning, it's been a long time, but returning, we have Sarah Silva and Mark Felton of Green Star Farm, used to be Felton Acres, now Green Star Farm, fixture at many farmers markets with great stuff. And just the best pullet eggs. Thank you for bringing pullet eggs to the farmers market. I just love them. Let's start by talking about the event, what the event is and its purpose.
The event is the Livestock Conservancy is having their once a year conference and workshops, and usually it's back east, but this year for the first time they're having it on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be at the Flamingo Hotel, I believe, in Santa Rosa, and there are a number of workshops.
Okay, here it says Jackson Park. Oh, they're doing that's the other part of the event.
Right.
Okay. I jumped
event.
Ahead.
But it's kind of tagged on to the Livestock Conservancy meetings and workshops that will be taking place. So they have a number of workshops that are there at the Flamingo Hotel, which I believe is actually on mostly Friday, but there are other pre-conference events that are taking place around the area at various farms.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be a meeting of all those people and interested members and parties.
Mm-hmm. What does the Livestock Conservancy do? What's their mission?
The Livestock Conservancy is an organization that for years has tracked the different heritage breeds, and as far as in so many cases, we have lost many of the breeds, not just in poultry, but in all different areas.
Mm-hmm.
That because of like the meats you were talking about, that what is easy to produce, what is cost effective to produce, there's been breeding, selective breeding taking place. And what we've done is we've lost a lot of the choices that we've had for meats over the years. And like when your grandmother says that chicken doesn't taste the way it used to, she's right, because they were used to farm fresh products that, and they were a whole different animal. So now I'm more familiar with the turkey side of things, and the heritage turkeys that we raise with the 4-H project are birds that were raised over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were gradually replaced between the 30s and the 50s by the broad-breasted turkey, which ended up being the broad-breasted white, which is pretty much what you buy when you go to a grocery store, mm-hmm. and buy a commercial turkey.
Mm-hmm.
The heritage birds take twice as long to grow, and they're more flavorful. They've got more complexity of flavor, and they've also lived a much different life.
Yes. Savannah, are you involved with raising turkeys?
Yes.
Okay, tell us about it. And what grade are you in?
I'm in 12th grade. I'm a senior this year.
Where at?
Sonoma Valley High School.
Okay. So you want to tell us how you got involved and what you're doing with your turkeys?
So turkeys weren't actually the first project I did. I do heritage sheep breeds as well. So I kind of got involved through 4-H, which is this community service / livestock organization. And I lean more towards the livestock side of 4-H. So that's how I really got involved with the turkeys. And it's one of those projects in 4-H that it's a countywide project, so mm-hmm. anyone in the county can do this. And I really got involved because I wanted to try something that was smaller than sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Sheep can be a bit of a hassle since they're so big and so costly to feed. So that's how I got involved mm-hmm. in that.
And how many turkeys are you raising?
This year I'm raising 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
At what stage are they right now in their growth?
They're pretty much almost finished growing. Mm-hmm. They're really big, and the toms are impressive, which those are male turkeys, the mm-hmm. toms. They're impressive size at this point. And I'd like to make a comment about how they look different from
mm-hmm. Sure, please.
Store-bought turkeys. They are a lot more narrower.
Yeah.
They're not as wide because they're not plumped up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be really misleading when you eat them. And so when I first tasted the turkey, like we had one for our Thanksgiving table. And I looked at it and was like, oh, this isn't much at all. And when it's almost all dark meat
because mm-hmm.
it's so natural. And you let them exercise their muscles and you let them have their space. And because it's so natural and it hasn't really been tampered with, the meat isn't, you know, just white-breasted meat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more flavorful. And so you get a lot more for less turkey.
Absolutely. And it's deeply satisfying.
Yes.
I know I picked, I think I got two last year. Okay. I think instead of getting one larger one, you asked me if I could take two smaller ones.
Oh, yeah, I think
and,
so.
And which was absolutely fine. And it was so delicious. There's really... You know, there's really no comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. I grew up, of course, nothing but broad-breasted, you know, white turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it.
Yeah, many people don't know the other options out
yeah.
there unless you live in this county.
Yeah.
And it's really advertised. But otherwise, in other places, you would never know.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. And, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you know, you'd have to be on a farm somewhere where there was a long tradition.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's the taste difference is really astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just think that there's something. I hate eating anything knowing that it had a miserable life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, I don't want to eat something that has been confined and not been able to be what it wants to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, what it was meant to be. So the event itself, so we've got the conference, the Livestock Conservancy Conference, and then we have the event taking place on November 7th. And is this like is this similar to the event last year where you auction off the turkeys?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that will be part of
that,
it.
There will be the auction.
In this particular case, it's a fundraiser for the Livestock Conservancy,
mm-hmm.
and then there will be a portion of it that is for Slow Food Russian River, but then we will have a live auction where we have 11 4-H youth that will be offering a turkey for auction for Thanksgiving.
Great. So. And let's see, it's taking place at Jackson Park, which is on Grange Road in Santa Rosa. That's out in Bennett Valley, right?
Yes.
Yes. And it's going to be a dinner prepared by local chefs. There will, guess what? There will be wine. and then, of course, the live auction, a silent auction, and lots of fun.
Absolutely.
Lots of fun. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, most definitely. The auction is always one of my favorite parts about the project. Really, it's great environment. A lot of people are happy to be there, and you know, the wine and the food help too. So.
Sure. Okay. And okay. The chefs, Justin Wangler of Jackson Family Wine, Michael Tui from the Legends Group, Adam Malley, I'm sorry. He's the regional executive chef at Bon Appetit Management Company at Twitter. And Doug Keen, we all know Doug Keen, executive chef for Cyrus, and great advocate for dogs that have been deemed difficult. I love Doug Keen's efforts on behalf of Green Dog Rescue. He's really paved the way for dogs that are not typically socialized to have a good life. And then we also have Tucker Taylor. He's the culinary gardener for Kendall Jackson. He is going to be involved as well. Okay, I want to bring Green Star Farm in to this discussion. And I know you guys, you're not part of Livestock Conservancy, but you sort of do a very similar thing on a local level. And I see you now every week at the, I think it's every week at the Sebastopol Farmers Market with, I love your goat.
Thank you.
The ground goat makes the best picadillo. It's just fabulous.
That's definitely a heritage breed.
Yes. So tell us about the scope of the farm.
Well, we're a 60-acre farm in Sebastopol, West County, and we raise actually quite a few of the heritage breeds. A lot of our selection originally was focused around sort of finding animals that were well adapted for the outside living environment that we don't get in the farming world these days.
We do eggs and meat chickens and goats and sheep. Goats for meat and dairy, and then hogs.
Right.
And so, part of those products or animals that we raise involve a lot of the heritage breeds because of their hardiness and survivability and mothering skills and, you know, their adaptation and their ability to adapt to actual real life environment.
Now, Mark, you said sheep for both meat and dairy.
That was goats.
Yeah. Oh, goat. Okay. Goats. So do you sell goat milk to Cheesemate? Tell me a little bit about that.
We have a livestock feed license, so we sell it as animal feed.
Oh, okay.
Right. We have this what's called a commercial feed license. So the commercial feed license under the CDFA allows us to sell our goat milk as livestock feed. We could do it as pet milk as well,
but we
actually choose to do livestock milk. And, you know, this is sort of our practice to maybe one day being a grade A dairy.
Oh, great.
At this time, we haven't built the dairy that could pass the inspections that would allow us to sell this for human consumption.
Right, so yeah, and I know that's a pretty complicated thing, or pretty intricate.
This is our fifth year as a farm, so we're still learning to do this.
How many farmers markets are you attending these days?
Right now, until next week, we actually attend three. We attend the Occidental Farmers Market, which is the only seasonal market we currently sort of regularly do. That ends next week,
right?
With a bang, because it's the Halloween.
Absolutely,
event,
it's a great market.
You know, way to end the market for the year. And then we also, year-round, we have two markets, one on Saturday at the Veterans Building, the Community Farmers Market, and one in Sebastopol on Sundays, year-round, at, you know, Sebastopol Downtown Farmers Market.
And then are there other ways for people to buy your products?
Sure. You can email us.
Oh, okay. And we'll give all that information
at
the end of the show. Okay. So you do special orders.
But then we also have a new company we're working with who actually provides home delivery of our products called grubmarket.com. And that's grub, G-R-U-B, market.com. And they've done a great job opening up this something that we previously could not handle, which is this home delivery of our products all over California, in fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
they
great.
Figured out a way to make it convenient enough for us.
Right.
We're not driving to San Francisco to participate, and so we can use
right.
Their
so they can, they come to you.
Yeah, it's been fabulous.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, that seemed to be a few years ago. A lot of the discussion was that missing link of how do you, you know, without the farmer or rancher killing themselves, how do you get things distributed enough so that you can sell everything? So things like. Grub Market, you said grubmarket.com, Sonoma County Meat Company, It's,
you know, I'd even put a plug out for some local restaurants, backyard and forest.
Sure.
You know, we do a lot of chicken farming for Dan.
Uh-huh.
And someone like Ramen Gaijin is buying eggs. I just dropped a case of eggs. Peter Lowell's in Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long, my first egg customer.
Oh, okay, great. We're going to take a little musical break and we'll be right back on Mouthful. Almost. Here we come. Let's see. You know, we have cranky CD players sometimes, but we're going to hear a little bit of Roxy music in just a second. Here we go.
Thank you. And you're listening to Mouthful here on KRCB-FM. Support for Mouthful comes from our members and from Willow Creek Wealth Management.
Wealth creates options. The independent, fee-only consultants at Willow Creek Wealth Management help you choose better options to meet your goals. Willow Creek Wealth Management, serving the North Bay since 1984. More information is available at willowcreekwealth.com.
And from Rocky the Free Range Chicken and Rosie the Original Organic Chicken, air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information and a listing of upcoming events is available at rockyandrosie.com. And from the North Bay Bohemian, published every Wednesday, celebrating the community, the arts, and the music scene in the North Bay and online at bohemian.com. And now we continue with Mouthful and Michelle Anna Jordan.
Thanks very much, Mary. And wow, we've got a lot of underwriters all of a sudden.
They have a new bird out. They have a new bird out, the Sonoma Red or something like
that. Yeah, I've seen that. I don't know much about it. Is it? It's smaller, right? I think I've seen it.
I think it might be a more heritage-like hybrid than the white birds, and I think they might do more to get a more diverse diet out. I've been told that it's quite a tasty bird.
Actually, I had one once, but I don't think I was paying enough attention. I think I was like busy feeding people, and you know, didn't really get to focus on it. But I think it's available at Oliver's.
I think Oliver's in Pacific has them.
Yeah, I think that's where I saw them, and I didn't realize at first the connection that that was part of Petaluma Poultry. But it is. Yeah, you know, Sonoma County really did, I think, start the free-range chicken movement back in the 80s when it was Bart Eamon. They started Rocky. And they've moved away, I believe. But it was an absolute revelation when we tasted a bird that had actually moved around a lot. It was, I remember I went to a very, very small tasting. This was in the, this was in the late 80s, and it was out at Melita Station Inn. And we just had a little, I was doing some cooking classes there for a while. And we had some people who were involved, and it was sort of a precursor to Select Sonoma County, which is now gone. And there were several people saying, hey, you know, Sonoma County, we need Sonoma made stickers, we need to get some acknowledgement. And one of the things we did was I cooked some of this chicken and some other dishes from local producers, and it was the difference in flavor, but even more so the difference in texture was so astonishing. And I think it's the same with eggs that are raised well. You eat a good egg, and you can never go back to eating, you know, bland commodity eggs anymore. Mark?
I feel very strongly that forage makes a huge difference in what goes into an egg. It, it really improves the quality and flavor. And, we've been putting a lot of effort this year into growing grass, you know, despite the drought, trying to have just enough grass to make sure that those eggs stayed consistent through the summer. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be, you know, bearing fruit. We've been getting feedback.
Your eggs are fabulous. Your eggs are really great. I want to bring Savannah back into the conversation now. When did you start? When did you first get involved?
Ooh, I got involved when I was in fifth grade in 4-H. I started off with three pygmy goats, and it wasn't for market or anything. It was just for showing at the fair, which I have a whole bunch of tangents and rants about the fair, but that's for a later date.
Or, you know, go ahead. We have time.
And then later on, I went into sheep, and that's what I mainly do now.
Mm-hmm. Do you live on land?
Yeah.
So
I live on land with my family. It's a family farm, and there are three houses on this 5-acre property, and we raise sheep, chickens, goats, and turkeys.
Savannah, what kind of sheep do you raise?
English Shropshire sheep. They're a purebred heritage sheep breed, and I show them at fair. However, they're not quite on par with the really pumped up American breeds, so it's really kind of an unequal playing field. And the people that have bought these sheep, they appreciate the flavor and the taste, but they are not necessarily show sheep. So
sure, they're not as bulky as your industrial sheep, as we say, or the bigger wool.
Yeah,
Suffolk.
Yeah, like the that. Suffolk and the Hampshires for sure. I wouldn't say they're not bulky. They're a really sturdy sheep. They're just not tall or long. They're smaller than
right, the conformation doesn't look like the other animals, which is, it's sort of the problem with heritage breeds, right? You get this discrimination because they don't look like what they're putting in the books.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have there are Southdowns that are at the fair too, and they are not the original breed. The original breed is now called Baby Doll Southdowns, and they're meant to be looked like as a miniature breed of Southdowns. No, they're actually the real breed of Southdown.
I know Canvas Ranch has this Baby Doll Southdowns.
Yeah, I believe that's where we got them from.
Oh, yeah. It may be. Yeah, I think I think they were the first local ranch to start raising them. They're not very nice.
No.
You know, with the name Baby Doll, you think, these are going to be the sheep that are going to come up and want their head patted. No.
I hate to break it to you, Michelle, but sheep just aren't very nice.
Really?
No. I mean, it's the least
friendly,
cuddly animal we have. Even though they may look like the cuddliest ones, they're sheep. They're a real true prey animal.
Yeah, I can detest to that. The only friendly sheep I've ever had was bottle fed.
Right.
It wouldn't leave me alone. So
yeah, that's a happy medium.
Yeah. There's no happy medium there.
And so does the farm sell commercially?
We used to. We used to have a farm called Hardin Gardens. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that. We closed down a couple years ago just because we didn't have the resources anymore. We didn't have the help. My grandparents retired, so when they retired, we retired the farm as well. But we used to sell. We were a fruit and vegetable farm. That's what we did. Now we've kind of shifted into the whole animal market field as far as farming goes. And right now I work for my grandfather, and he runs a commercial egg business.
Oh.
And it's I don't know if I would call it commercial. I mean, he's approved. He has a license. He's very local. He only stays within Sonoma. And he has a customer list of like 30 or 40 customers that have eggs weekly. And he goes and he delivers them on their doorstep every Friday morning.
Oh, the egg man, like the old milkman.
Yeah. And so for my work, I sort out the eggs by size. And it's a really cool process. You weigh them. I take statistics on them because that's what he likes. He likes to see
Statistics of weight, that sort of thing?
Yeah, like which house is laying the most large eggs. So it's a really fascinating thing to watch as these chickens grow, how many eggs they start to produce. And so it's really fun, and I help raise and feed the chickens as well. And then he does all the deliveries and he sorts out which customer gets what eggs. And so we've kind of made it into a two-person business.
How great. And working with your grandfather, that's so great.
Yeah.
Do you wash the eggs?
Do I wash the eggs?
Yeah. Are the eggs washed?
Yes.
Okay.
They're washed very lightly, though. There's not like we use any heavy soaps or anything.
Yeah.
We just take a cloth and we wash them off.
Yeah, because there's some people say don't wash them. A lot of people automatically wash them. And if you don't wash them, you don't have to refrigerate them. But I think eggs that haven't been washed freak out a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's,
not like me. It's like, oh, look, there's feathers. There's a little dirt. This is awesome.
Yeah. For the purposes of making the eggs look neat, we just take a cloth and we rub it off. And then we cool them, of course. And the eggs are super cool because it's not just white eggs. We have brown eggs and blue eggs.
Oh, great.
So it looks like an Easter basket.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So you have several different breeds.
Yeah. So we have Americana. We have Bantams. I forget the breed that lays the white eggs.
Oh, there's several, I think.
Yeah.
California white.
Yeah.
Leghorn or California White?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have, we definitely have Leghorns too, mm-hmm. so.
Now, Leghorn, that's the that's the commercial chicken, yeah. And, you know, quite some time ago, again, back to the 80s, I think, maybe the early 90s, if anyone remembers Marty Teitel. Marty Teitel was, I believe, the executive director for a while of the CS Fund, which for a time took over what is now Occidental Arts and Ecology. Mm-hmm. And CS Fund still exists, and I think they may still have an office in Freestone, but Marty has moved, I believe, to Texas, and he does a lot of really good work, and he wrote a book, I think it was 50 Things You Can Do to save the Planet. And I just lost my train of thought. What was it going to be? Marty and eggs. I know. He talked about, in the introduction to his book, he talked about keeping the gene pool, and that's one of the things CS Fund was very involved in, saving seeds, and in writing about germplasm and the importance of keeping that gene pool wide. And one of the things that, if you don't have the opportunity or the desire to study this, you might not realize, but if you take the Leghorn chicken as an example, if a disease came along that affected Leghorn chickens, and they're pretty much the only commercial chicken for quite a few decades, you could wipe out the entire egg industry in a country,
yeah.
you know, through this disease. And so one of the things, he was really good at simplifying it. He said, if you buy brown eggs, you are supporting genetic diversity. Mm-hmm. If you only, you know, if you just, all you can do is go to the supermarket, choose brown eggs, and you're voting for at least one other breed of chicken mm-hmm. that will have different responses than Leghorn. And I think when you feel overwhelmed about it, I think that's a good thing to remember.
I think he was very successful getting some people to believe that brown eggs are healthier or a better choice. But, mm-hmm. You know, at this point, I think we're beyond that.
Right, well, yes.
If they're pastured eggs, they can be white and they're still...
Absolutely, yeah. Now it's a... Yeah. And it's not just Leghorns that lay white eggs. It's a number of breeds that... Am I right?
Right. There's a California white. There's mm-hmm. California gray. Uh-huh. There's the anaconda...
Aracona?
No,
that's Aracona. That's
Ancona. Uh-huh. Right, and so you know
The Mediterranean breeds were generally the ones that laid the white eggs.
Yeah, so you no longer have to always choose brown eggs, like you say, if you're getting pastured eggs, mm-hmm. and the best eggs are the ones that look like an Easter basket with all the different colors.
You need to know your farmer. You need to know where they're coming from. You need to know how they're raised. You need to know that they're in an environment that's healthy for the animal and us.
Yes, that's the key to it all. Know your farmer, mm-hmm. and if you live in Sonoma County. That's easy. It's a really easy thing to do.
There's no excuse.
There's no. But you would be surprised.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
I
grew up here. I'm very aware.
The discussions I have with people, including some members of my own family, that
we all have the same family members. Actually.
Okay. Yeah. It's so frustrating because it's like they're at our fingertips. Why wouldn't you get almost everything you eat directly from a farmer if you're here? I mean, isn't that one of the reasons you want to be here?
Yeah. Living on a family farm, I never really understood why people didn't do it because everything was there. I could go into the backyard and get some lettuce if I wanted to for salad. I didn't really search for food or go to other farms because everything was already right there. And then I'd find out where other kids were getting their food or where their parents and family members were getting it. And I didn't fully understand the whole marketing process until later on when I was older in middle school and in high school. And then I started to figure out, you know, there's this whole other industry and it's not necessarily as moral and as innocent as the family farm that I lived on. And it was kind of hard to listen and hear about that.
Yeah, that's a great observation. What do you see yourself doing? Do you see yourself continuing in working on the land, working with animals and that sort of thing?
For a while, I wanted to go into veterinary medicine. Right now, I'm really torn, like, between people medicine and veterinary medicine.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I have some family members that are doctors as well, so I've been learning a lot from them, and it's just, yeah, so I'm just kind of exploring my options at this point, and as a side project.
You don't need to know at this age.
Yeah.
We need good people in both categories.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And one of the great, one of the big problems with medicine, as I'm sure you know, in the United States, is its disconnect between what we eat. Just this enormous disconnect. Absolutely. Doctors get, I think it may have changed, but in medical school, doctors get less than eight, they get less than one day of nutritional training. And I had a vet who I really liked, and I was talking to a little puppy, Lark, here. She was having seizures when she was little. And I went to this vet to talk to her about it, and I did not want to put her on a prescription diet. She eats what I eat in that, I mean, she eats your meat sometimes, both of my dogs. They eat a local grass-fed diet that I make. And the doctor just looked at me and she says, I'll tell you, I know nothing about nutrition. And she said, you know, and they have their walls of all of the commercial foods and the better commercial foods, the ones that are so-called better. And, you know, if you have a dog with certain problems, then they give you a prescription, but it's so far away from the source of the food. Mm-hmm. And so I disobeyed all three vets that I talked to, and I did not put her on a prescription diet, and I didn't put her on anti-seizure medication. I just kept her on, I adjusted the diet a little bit based on a consultation with another veterinarian who actually approved of my diet completely. Hmm. And I just took liver out. She mm-hmm. said she wants liver to be only a maximum of 5% of whatever mix you're giving. And I mean, this vet is so conscientious. She will go to the farm before she will recommend that you use that particular meat. And what she said was because the liver gathers all the pollutants, that she recommends that you don't have very much liver. So I just cut liver out of what I was making, and she hasn't had. She hasn't had a seizure since it's been, she hasn't had a seizure in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I was pretty astonished when the vet just looked at me. She says, I know nothing about nutrition for animals, nothing. And she was a really good vet with great compassion towards the end of her career. Mm-hmm. And in general, except for this one homeopathic vet, Stephanie Chalmers in Santa Rosa, most of the vets I've encountered, they don't think about nutrition other than, you know, what the major companies send to them.
Yeah, and it's kind of all controlled by these major companies.
Yeah.
And so what they call, you know, other diets, other forms of nutrition food, they put that under alternative medicine. And really, it's just basic facts about nutrition. Mm-hmm. But that's what they tell these vets at vet school, and even for people as well. And they give them all these medications and say, here, this is what you should really
yes.
be giving them.
Yeah. And as I find that, I finally thought about it, because I was intimidated, partly because I'd never had a puppy before. So I was sort of in over my head. And I thought about it, I was like, wait a minute. I'm a chef. I have a background as a chef. I know a lot about nutrition. If I can feed hundreds of people, I can feed two small dogs. You know, there's common sense. I don't need to go and buy. Well, if you're gonna give them, you know, homemade food, you better be buying this supplement and that supplement and that supplement. And it's like, no, I don't believe that.
Well, I mean, the feed blends are a shortcut. You know, it's easy for people who sure. don't have the expertise.
Sure. And plus, you know, my dogs eat 4 ounces a day. So if I had big dogs, it
oh,
would
man.
Be...
Oh, man, it's a good thing you don't have my dogs.
Yeah.
But almost with the smaller volume, the more careful you have to be to yeah. get the ratios right.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm really careful. I do a good job, but it would be a lot more work if I was feeding Labradors or something. You know, I mean, the amount of food I can make for them for, you know, a month would probably last, you know, a few days.
I mean, I can understand the perspective that for a lot of people, you wouldn't want to say, oh, yeah, just feed them whatever.
You know, oh, no, you don't.
A balance, you know, some people just throw bread at a bunch of pigs and they just get fat because it's right. just carbs, you know, it's just sugar.
No, you have to do your, if you're going to, and one of these days I'm going to do a program on pet food. I know Paula Downing, manager of the farmer's market in Sebastopol, she lived in Oregon for a number of years and she said nobody bought pet food. Everybody made their own pet food.
Yeah, it's absurd that, I mean, it's not absurd because people barely can cook for their children these days.
Yes.
You know, yeah. How can you expect them to actually figure out how to cook for their animals, too?
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of the problem with sourcing from farms is that if you're not actually cooking and preparing the food, you know, you're definitely not thinking about where to go get it in the first place.
Yeah. Our biggest hurdle in the beginning was teaching people how to cook a whole chicken.
That is still a hurdle.
Is a huge concept for people in this day and age. You
know,
they want you to cut it. I'm like, all right, yeah. On a fresh chicken day, you come to the farm and I'll show you how to cut it up. I'll even cut the first one for you in front of you. You know, and you come and I'll do it and, you know, we'll package it up for you and, you know, you'll be on your way. And now, you know, what is it? Give a man a fish, feed him for a day, you teach him how to fish. You know, feed them for
a lifetime.
As long as there are fish.
Yes, as long as they, But when,
they're not that hard to part, is what she said.
when my niece had her second baby, I gave them food for 2 weeks. You know, I delivered meals for, I think for 2 weeks. I would take, you know, prepared food to them for 2 or 3 days, come back, get the dishes, take more. And one time I just did a beautiful roast chicken because, you know, who doesn't love roast chicken? And she is, like, sweet and smart and accomplished. And she said, I don't know what to do with a whole chicken. I've never even seen a cooked one before. And she's, you know, Sonoma County girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are people who don't know how to boil water. Yeah, they don't know what boiling water looks like.
Yeah, well, sometimes I boil too far because I'm out doing chores.
Sure.
But, you know.
Sure, but you stand there and you look at the pot and you don't know what it means to boil water. So there's a lot of re-education. There's a lot of education that needs to be done for one or two generations when people haven't cooked. Is your mom and dad, your mom and dad are good cooks?
Well, my dad... He is in the military, and he used to be a chef. So he would go to places like Iraq, and he'd help feed injured soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And so he's very good at cooking. He never cooks at home, though, because he'll come back from work, and he'll just...
Yeah.
He doesn't want to deal with
food. He wants to chill, sure.
Yeah. And so... you wouldn't believe it, but I'm actually from a Mexican family. My grandmother's 100% Mexican, and she's an excellent cook. I mean, every person on the side of my mom's family, they're great at what they do, cooking.
Mm-hmm. What are her? Does she have specialties? Things that she's like loves to do or is super good at?
My mom or my
your grandmother?
My grandmother. She cooks albóndigas. Which are they're spicy meatballs?
Yes,
what I serve them as.
Oh, they love them!
Come in this delicious sauce, and it's my favorite dish. Whenever she comes back, I always ask her, you know, to make these. And then chili rellenos, I love to make that. We have, you know, just basic enchiladas, whatever they feel like cooking. It's a lot of Mexican food.
The reason I ask is because I love Mexican food. And I know that over in Napa Valley, they've organized this thing, or they were for a while, it was the Culinary Families. Mm-hmm. And they would have an annual event. And the Culinary Families were Mexican families who would, and they weren't professional chefs. They were home cooks. Yay for home cooks. Those are the best cooks in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And each one would have their own specialty, and they would all come together and share their specialties. And I want to go spend time with the Pozole family. I love Pozole. Mine's pretty good, but I don't have a Mexican background. We're going to take one quick musical break, and we'll be right back to wrap it up with our guests.
Only 17. features into magazines. Go to Plaza, where's the train? Only 17. Slip some more trash.
Yep, it's mouthful. Time flies when you're having great conversation. Want to go back now to the Livestock Conservancy event, because, I mean, that's what brought us together today. And it's taking place on November 7th. That is a Saturday. Yes, mm-hmm. That's a Saturday. And it's out in Bennett Valley at the Jackson Park on Grange Road. Grange Road is what goes between Petaluma Hill Road and Bennett Valley Road. It's a great area. I used to drive it all the time. What does it cost to attend? That's what I'm looking for.
It's $150 per person, mm-hmm. and it starts with appetizers, and then dinner is at 6:30. But that includes a keynote speaker, Barry Estabrook, that wrote Pigtails, an Omnivore's Guide to a Sustainable Meal, and then also the chefs that you mentioned earlier. So it, and during that time, we'll also have the live turkey auction mm-hmm. from the 4-H kids.
And the money benefits Livestock Conservancy, 4-H, and Slow Food Russian River.
Correct.
And then let's talk just a little bit. So if you want to get a turkey, do you go to the Slow Food website like you have in the past? Oh.
You're fading.
If you want to get a turkey, do you go to the Slow Food website and sign up? Because that's how it's happened in years past.
Right. It's slowfoodrr, which stands for Russian River, .org. And you can get information there about ordering a turkey for Thanksgiving, a heritage turkey for Thanksgiving, organically fed. And you can also get more information about the event on November 7th.
And can you go all the way through and get tickets for the event?
I'm not sure if you can do that on the Slow Food Russian River site. For sure, you can do it on the livestockconservancy.org.
Okay. Livestockconservancy.org.
And that would be where you would go for the information about the event. Which is called the Savor the Age of Flavor Gala.
Say that one more time.
Yeah, really. Savor the Age of Flavor Gala.
Okay. I want to talk to the person who came up with that title.
That wasn't me.
And I want to say the turkeys are divided into five categories, 8 to 10 pounds, 11 to 12 pounds, 13 to 15 pounds, 16 to 19, and 20 pounds and over. And one of the things, if you decide you're going to try one of these heritage breed turkeys, and they really are worth it, two things to know. You have to cook them differently. And I'm either going to do a show about how to cook a heritage turkey, because I think you do not want to ruin it, or I'm going to do a column in my Wednesday column, Seasonal Pantry. I feel strongly that you should not, you know, brining got very popular, and you should not brine a heritage turkey. That's crazy. But I will be doing something about it. You cook it hotter, you cook it faster. Those are the two main things to know, but there's a few other things. And then the other thing is, do not throw away the carcass. One of the saddest things in the world, and I've seen this at so many people's houses, I'll be walking through the kitchen or something, and there's the carcass in the trash, and I really want to pull it out and take it home. I'm tempted to give my phone number. You don't want your turkey carcass? Call me. I'll come pick it up.
Well, and when you buy one of these turkeys, you get a neck, and you get
head, feet,
some giblets, and things that you can cook together with that carcass to make a really nice stock.
And it makes fabulous stock. And we are out of time. Green Star Farm, tell us again how people get in touch with you.
info@greenstarfarm.com or visit us at greenstarfarm.com, and, you know, or visit us at the farmers markets on Saturdays and Sundays in Santa Rosa and Sebastopol.
Thank you so much for taking time on your, I know you had, we had an open house or something. Really appreciate you coming.
You're welcome.
No, we're just farming.
Okay. And I really appreciate what you do. Thank you, Catherine Thone and Savannah Shell.
Yeah.
You know, right on. You're awesome. You know, the world is going to be in good hands with your generation.
I really
admire what you're doing and wish you the best of luck with things to come.
Thank you.
And on that note, we are out of time. I don't know what's happening next Sunday, but it will be Mouthful's 20th anniversary. So we will be having some fun here on Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. Have a great week. Have a fabulous Halloween. Don't forget to get outside and see the full Hunter Moon. I think it's tomorrow night. I don't think it's tonight. I think it's, anyway, it's coming soon. Don't miss it. Meet me back here next week.
Grapes are coming.